Finance, agenda revised 4185. Today's date 4/2/85, 8:30 a.m. here in Room A. This is a work session on HB 2229, public hearing and work session on SB 190, SB 181, SB 182, SB 180, SB 189. This is tape 150, side A.
Order. On the agenda this morning, we have a variety of bills. Work session on House Bill 2229. Public hearing and possible work session 190, 181, 182, 180, 189. I'm not certain that we'll get through any or even all of those, but those are on the agenda this morning. I think the most important topic that we want to deal with in our first order of business will be our continuing efforts to mediate the Lane County War.
The city of Milwaukee was there.
Oh, and the city of Milwaukee, too. They're back this morning. And let's say the Lane County and the Clackamas County War.
Mr. Chairman.
Jim Burrows?
That everyone know, I want everyone to be aware, I was not avoiding the Lane County conflict. I was talking to Eugene Chamber of Commerce yesterday, and for some reason this issue never came up, but I wanted to explain I was not avoiding the war.
I wish it had been me talking to the Ben Chamber of Commerce yesterday, and you here running the committee.
Well, I'm not sure about that, but anyway.
Let's see. Work session, House Bill 2229. There were some requests made yesterday to deal with this topic indefinitely, and I think my preference would be to, rather than dragging it out for the rest of the session, to just push toward closure, have our work session, see if we can, in a deliberative process, get closure on the issue if all possible today. Discussion in the committee by committee members, how would you like to proceed? Ms. Hostica, do you want to start off, and then we'll ask other members of the committee how they would wish to proceed?
Carl? Mr. Chairman, there's a variety of new information. However, I guess I would, rather than go through all of that information in presentation form, we'd have it available if committee members wanted specific questions asked. We did have in the book right behind the exhibits a subcommittee findings and recommendations. It's the second item behind the tab on exhibits, which basically summarizes the issue, and then on the second page provides those items that the subcommittee recommended for adoption, and then two items on the bottom, which were items that we thought that since we couldn't agree on a subcommittee level, we would bring to this committee to see if we could resolve those questions. So obviously my preference would be for the committee to adopt the subcommittee's recommendations, and if it's appropriate, I'll move it.
Okay, my biases would be the same. I've gone through the subcommittee recommendations, and I too am supportive of the subcommittee recommendations, feel that subcommittee has analyzed the issue very well and made the proper recommendation, and I'm certainly comfortable in moving forward to get closure on the issue as quickly as we can provide it. Further discussion?
Mr.
Schoon.
Well, what about the two undrafted recommendations, the unresolved recommendations, I guess?
Yes. I think we can have some discussions on those. I have personal opinions on both of them, and I'm sure most of the other committee members do too. I think what I'd like to do is to walk through the subcommittee findings and recommendations and have Terry walk us through the history and walk us specifically through the subcommittee recommendations so we can understand exactly what the subcommittee is recommending on each point, and then look at the last two issues where a recommendation was not arrived upon and see if the committee wants to take action on either of those points, and if so, what action. Representative Hugo?
Mr. Chairman, we do have a motion before us.
I didn't accept the motion at this. I think it's probably premature.
Okay.
Sure. Any further discussion on how we proceed? Terry, could you walk us through the history, please?
Okay, this is just a short documentation of some of the discussion from yesterday and the primary facts that came out in the subcommittee hearings and work sessions. The history of this issue dates back really to far, far back as 1971. In 71 and 77, there were informal AG opinions. The 77 one was by, I don't remember, in 71, that interpreted when taxes were collected. One of the, I'm sure the two key issues in this controversy are, when are taxes collected, quote unquote, and what are taxes designated for municipal corporations or local government? This first issue dealing with the definition of collected, in that opinion, the Attorney General informally arrived at the conclusion that taxes were not collected until they were posted in ballots. The term that was used in the 77 letter, I believe, was run through the cash register. The question had come up, and at that time the counties were operating under that direction from the Attorney General, that taxes were collected and hence then subject to the interest following principal on those accounts after the tax collector had posted a balance. And primarily what we're talking about here are payments that are received in the mail. That's where the major issue arises over the time it takes to actually post and balance those. And remember that when the tax collector receives some property tax payments, they may be partial payments, they may be payments for more than 1 year. There are a number of sort of documentations that have to take place with respect to each one of those payments as to which account, which owner, and what tax year that they apply to, so that there is some process beyond just cashing the check and noting the payment that takes place. Then in 1979, in some House amendments to Senate Bill 527, this is where we're getting into the second issue dealing with designated, in 1979, late in the session, June 29th, the House Revenue Committee, in response to a request from Ozzie Rose, drafted some amendments to 294.080, which spoke to at the time the issue that an issue that was raised about, and I think it was Coos County, earning interest on Western Oregon severance tax monies. The distinction of those type of funds and the attempt at the term designated, which we'll get into in a moment, the distinction on those funds is that the Department of Revenue collects those funds. And the Department of Revenue distributes those funds to the counties. At that time, the counties know, one, how much the total money is, and two, what the dollar amount is that goes to each taxing district. So in other words, all the information is known with respect to that particular distribution, what the total amount is and how much each district gets. So wording was drafted to not just limit to Western Oregon service tax, because there were other examples of pass-through monies in which the total amount and distribution was known. In your booklets is a copy of ORS 294.080, three pages back from this outline, and a copy of those 1979 House amendments, which added subsection 3 to 294.080, which basically says that the county cannot earn interest on the funds for its general fund on monies that have been designated for other municipal corporations. That was the terminology that was put into the statutes. Subsequent to that amendment and change in the statutes, in 1982, School District Number 1 filed a tax court case against Multnomah County for lost interest and penalties, basically asserting that the counties were not following the law in two areas. One, that they were not making timely distribution of property tax monies which had been collected. And then we came back to that key term, what is collected, what are property taxes that have been collected. And secondly, that the county held and earned interest on funds which were designated for the district. Basically, what School District Number 1 was asserting at the time was that the county was bogarting some funds to try to earn interest that were due those taxing districts, and secondly, that the county was not distributing money in as timely a fashion, irrespective of interest earnings. And basically, in 1984, a final judgment came out against Multnomah County in favor of school district number one on, and in your outline, on point B, on the issue concerning the interest on funds which were designated for the district. The judgment was a function of some out-of-court negotiations between Multnomah County and School District 1, so that the final judgment took place with respect to the second issue on funds designated, and the whole issue with respect to taxes collected, there was simply no judgment. Anyways, the key interpretation by the tax court, Judge Stewart, dealt with his interpretation of the term collected, which, by the way, collected has been in statutes for a long time. Collected is it had nothing to do with the 79 amendments. The judge basically said that when taxes are collected, when the tax collector is in constructive receipt of the money, in other words, prior to it being posted and balanced. Secondly, the judge interpreted the term designated in 294.080 as meaning any funds which were distributed ultimately to local governments, not just those funds for which there was a known amount and known distribution. Basically saying that no interest can be earned by the county at any time for monies that they hold for or are passing through or collecting for other municipal corporations. The term that's used in applying to that interpretation of designated is interest follows principal. And so when you combine these two tax court opinions on collected and designated, what you get is, one, interest follows principal, and two, the money is principal when immediately upon receipt by the county tax collector. So basically the conclusion of the whole thing is that the county is precluded from earning interest on any funds, which property tax funds, which are collected and then ultimately distributed to local governments. And two, it is virtually immediate requirement that those funds be handled as principal and distributed, it turns out, in a period of about five business days from the time that the tax collector is in constructive receipt of the funds. Subsequent, and you've been through this information yesterday, subsequently you've had multiple other potential litigations, negotiations, etc. in other areas. I might point out that this, I put on my legal hat here, the opinion in Multnomah County versus School District 1 doesn't carry any, each subsequent case will stand on its own merits with respect to future litigation. That this is not some a formal precedent on future judgments necessarily, but certainly this gives an indication to the other taxing districts that potentially they can receive similar interpretations and similar judgments as they pursue potential litigation against the counties.
Mr. Chairman? Representative McCracken?
Terry, what time did other districts begin negotiation or litigation? Was it following the March opinion, or was it earlier?
Representative McCracken, I simply don't know. There was some information yesterday with respect, I think, to Milwaukee that did post-date the final judgment. I simply do not have that information.
Okay, thank you for the history, Terry. Carl, let's have you make your motion and then have you speak to that motion and or present the subcommittee recommendations. So could you go ahead and place the motion?
I guess formally I would move the subcommittee recommendations on House Bill 2229, which include the amendments that are printed as 2229-6.
Let's see, where are those located?
Those are located after, just before the bill now, in the tab under exhibit.
Okay, the motion before us is to adopt the Day 6 amendments to House Bill 2229. Carl?
Yeah, I'd like to say a few things to put this into context based upon the testimony we've heard and the work that the subcommittee did. I think that as I stated yesterday, it was my preference when I first became aware of this issue and aware of the controversy, at least in Lane County, that the local governments settled the issue. And in fact, I urged upon them continually for a number of months. Representative Burroughs was with me at a time when we both did that, that they try to reach a settlement. And if they couldn't reach a settlement, then the legislature would probably be asked to act, because there were pressures on us from other areas to take action, and we were trying to resist those pressures. It appears, though, that at least in our area, that people are getting further and further away from an agreed-upon settlement, and as we had testimony in the subcommittee, they were moving closer and closer to a court date. So I think that politically, from that point of view, it's appropriate for us to deal with this issue. I think it's also, in a formal sense, appropriate for us to do it, since it appears to me that there's considerable doubt about what the legislature intended in 1979. And although we aren't a court, we all have experience with what legislative intent means, especially when some action is taken in the closing days of a session. And it's probably appropriate for us to use that experience to try and give some interpretation. I think there is reasonable doubt as to what the court or the 1979 law change meant. I think there's still reasonable doubt. And I think that the subcommittee's recommendations actually are a compromise and are not a position that should be compromised further. I think they represent a compromise already. I think the subcommittee could have said, and we had a staff paper that was presented that gave us our options, we could have said that the tax court was simply wrong, and that the counties, no county owed anything for any time. That was possible. We could have put an interpretation on the law, 1979 change, to say the tax court put the wrong interpretation on it. We could also have said that there was no liability attaching to counties up to the effective date of the act of this House Bill 2229. We could have gone the other direction, of course, and say the tax court was completely right and the counties not only owed interest but penalties. I think that what the subcommittee came up with was a compromise. And hopefully the committee will be able to ratify that compromise and not look at it as a new position which will be further compromised in whatever direction. I guess the date has become an issue of controversy. I think that there's evidence that we can supply to the committee, if that's of interest, to indicate that even the judge wasn't sure when he gave his April 8th or August 8th opinion that that was his final order, that he invited further information from interested parties. So, basically, I would say it's appropriate for us to do this. I think that what the subcommittee has come up with is a reasonable compromise between some polar positions. There's considerable doubt and confusion out in the community as what ought to be done, and so it would be best if we could settle it here today. If necessary, I can go through the recommendations again in detail.
Before we turn to the recommendations, go ahead and finish your comments, but before we turn to the specific recommendations, I'd like to ask the other three members of the sub if they had additional comments.
Okay. That's the rest end of my comments in terms of the general context.
Okay. Appreciate that. Further discussion, Representative Traeger?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think Representative Huska explained it well. The proposal is a compromise. I'm not completely pleased with what it did from where I was coming from, because I really didn't think we should be in this back issue at all. I thought we ought to let the local governments out there figure that out based on the court case, and then we should look at, as the original bill did, we should be looking at that future and what we expect them to do. But recognizing that, we did have a lot of discussion without hearing on it. I think it's probably as close to a reasonable compromise as we'll approach. I have no problem with the adjustments that we did make, if in fact we're going to go in back into history and try to cure some of the problems, and that's what the subcommittee said we needed to do.
Further discussion, Ted or Mike?
Well,
Sam Clary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am supportive of the idea of a compromise, not just for compromise sake, though. I think we get into the trap in these committees and in this assembly that everything is a compromise. And I see a danger in that, because if everything is a compromise, then that means that the way to go into any kind of a discussion is to take some kind of an extreme position, and then you end up somewhere and you give some, you know, you end up perhaps losing out, or I just don't think things are well served by having everything be it. I'm supportive because I think, as Representative Hoskins has indicated, that there are some questions about intent, some questions about some of the facts even, and I guess I'd have to point out one specific, and that is I think that the Oregon State Department of Revenue could have helped an awful lot if in the earlier stages, if they had been clearer and more decisive and pushed them out a little bit. I have continued to be disturbed about this whole thing because I think that the, and this is, I guess, only an opinion, it seems to me that at least some counties have not acted in good faith. I think that they have seen this whole thing as, if we stonewall a little bit, if we play good poker, if we line up some folks, then we can come out of this deal pretty clean, and kind of taken the attitude that I'm referring to in my talk about compromising, so I'm willing to go along. I have some personal questions about whether March or the previous August is a correct date. I definitely am supportive of at least one of the recommendations that we did not agree on, which is to settle the time limit on posting and so forth. I think that's part of all of this, is that if you subscribe to the theory that says that it's never been clear up till now, and one of the reasons we have this bill is to make it clearer, then I would say let's make it clearer. And I'll even go a little further than that, and that is to say that when you're setting a standard like this, then it seems to me that you don't totally settle that by going to some people who administer it and say, what's convenient for you? You know, how long do you need? I think you set a standard as a standard and then say, now reach that standard. And so, I don't think we brought this out recently, but at one time there was a proposed amendment from Portland School District that said 5 days is right, and we asked some county people, what do you think is reasonable? And they said, well, 90 days is about right. Well, see, there we go again. And so I think that is an issue that needs to be cleared up. On the other hand, I also think that the this committee or the subcommittee almost totally disregarded the penalties in all the deliberations, and I think with good reason. Those penalties are very unreasonable, and so I think that we need to probably either address them and make them more reasonable, or decide that we can accomplish the same thing through another means. So I guess that's that at the moment. Until we get into specifics, that gives you kind of my attitude, and I appreciate the time.
Good, thank you. Representative McCracken?
Well, I agree that this is a compromise given the variety of positions that we could have had. I nonetheless feel that it's really good public policy. What we've done here is to clarify, you know, exactly how counties are to handle those monies, and we have taken the reasonable date, the date at which I believe other school districts and other taxing bodies began to, you know, approach the counties and try to negotiate a settlement, the date at which time counties were aware that they had a problem with allowed in this law for negotiations for those districts to recover any interest judgments, you know, through that time. I think that's fair. I think it keeps it out of court, but nonetheless will provide some settlement to the districts. I agree with Representative Calori that we do need to establish a time limit, and I think we can rapidly do that following adoption of the subcommittee report. I would add that I think we have clarified the language on penalties, so that's point number 3 on amendments to 2229, where we've applied the penalties under the funds which are not timely turned over or distributed, not the entire levy amount. So I think that we've approached all the major issues and made good, clear public policy so that there won't be any question arising in the future.
Further discussion? Questions from other committee members?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Burroughs?
I just want the record to show that I think we should deal with the time, but I've always been committed to the concept that counties should be reimbursed for collecting that. And my one concern is sending this out and having a feeling it's over. it does cost money to collect that those funds. It does cost to distribute that those funds, and I think the county should be reimbursed for that effort.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion, Representative Hugo?
A question on the amendment. I suppose I would direct this to staff or to Representative Rostica, but at line 25 of the amendment, referring to our penalties here, and that the county board will be liable to pay 10% for the amount not distributed, plus 12% interest. 12% of what? On what?
The amount not distributed.
Carrie?
Should we, how about we get Elizabeth Norman up for the amendments?
Welcome.
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Fugo, I intended for that to be...
Introduce yourself.
Elizabeth Norman, Legislative Council. I intend that to be 12% on the amount that they are paying as a penalty. That could be clarified easy enough.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hugo?
Well, the 10% is fairly clear. If $100 were not distributed, the penalty would be 10% of that $100. Mm-hmm. So that'd be 10 bucks. Now, plus 12% interest per year from the day distribution should have been made. Is it 12% of the $10?
Yes. That was my understanding.
12% of the 10%.
Yes. That was my understanding. That that was what the committee wanted.
The subcommittee's
clearly the intent, Representative Hostica.
Yeah, I believe that. Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
Representative Hugo probably raises a point. We might want to clarify that to tie that down a little tighter. Mm-hmm. Any further questions or discussion? If not,
Chairman,
Representative Hostica.
Just one point. I believe Representative Calori made a good point, and it was partially an oversight on my part and partially a reaction to what was brought to us yesterday to emphasize the compromise nature of this. I think the subcommittee did, rather than try to find a middle ground between positions that were staked out by adversarial parties, tried to find a way to understand the issue in terms of the lack of clarity in the 79 law and the process that went through the courts and came upon what we believe was a position that did say that that there was doubt for a considerable period of time, that there's probably still is doubt, but the tax court resolved some of that doubt, and we want to deal only with the situation in which there was no question in anybody's mind that there was uncertainty about what ought to be done. So I think that point was well taken by Representative Flores.
Representative Hostica, would you please walk us through the 6 points that are included in the amendments? We might want to just go through the subcommittee recommendation sheet. And
I think that's the best place to start. As the first, obviously, it says we're using House Bill 2229 as the basis and accepting basically the idea that interest follows principal and that the collection and distribution of taxes. Property taxes should be streamlined and that some guidance should be given. So then we made some amendments which are listed. The first amendment states that property tax money should be deposited only in the unsegregated tax accounts rather than any other account that they could possibly deposit it to. We thought there should be some specificity. In fact, I believe this amendment was brought to us by the Portland School District. The second amendment requires that the penalty provisions apply to the county treasurer as well as to the tax collector, since in some counties those are separate individuals, other counties are the same individuals. And it's the treasurer as well as the tax collector on the penalty provisions. Again, I believe that was brought to us by the Portland School District. The third amendment indicates that penalties will apply only to funds that were not turned over. That's basically clarification, we believe clarification of a major uncertainty in the law, since the existing penalty language doesn't say what the penalty applies to. It could apply to the entire amount of taxes collected for that year levied. We thought it was fair that it only applied to those that were not turned over. There was some discussion on the subcommittee that we would remove penalty language altogether if we established a time certain for turnovers. Okay, then amendment. The Fourth Amendment is probably the one that has the most controversy attached to it, and that was to forgive the counties any interest judgments for the time scheduled prior to the March 23rd, 1984 date. Fifth one is to forgive any penalties relating to the timely turnover tax monies prior to the effective date of the legislation. Again, we said that it's not clear what that penalty provision applied to. It's also the penalty provision, the existence of the penalty provision has probably turned out to be one of the major things that has inhibited the pursuit of this case through the court process to a final resolution in the court system. That we should remove that inhibition, and also since it was not clear and was a provision that nobody could really clearly understand, that we just forgive it altogether. Then the sixth point, I think, is also an important point. It came up based on testimony, and that was to protect board members of taxing districts, which could include water districts, cities, school districts, special districts of any type. They would be protected against any personal liability that they may have for not pursuing, I believe that's what that says, pursuing compensation for the tax collection and distribution prior to March, I think we should say subsequent.